The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show as we resume new programs, live programs, right here in Edmond, Oklahoma, for the last week and a half or so. We've been observing our annual Feast of Tabernacles and Last Great Day observance. If you'd like to know more about those annual festivals, Herbert Armstrong writes all about them in our free little booklet, Pagan Holidays or God's Holy Days, which we have quite a bit to say about those festivals in our correspondence course as well. That's also free of charge, 36 lessons. You can enroll in that course and really get a good grasp of the basic fundamental teachings of the Bible, including God's annual festivals like the Feast of Tabernacles, like the Last Great Day. All of our literature, as you know, is offered free of charge, whether on this radio show or at our website, thetrumpet.com, or on the programs, the TV programs, The Key of David. And this is a tradition, really, that goes back all the way back to the 1930s. Herbert Armstrong, based upon scriptures like Acts 20 and verse 35, where it says it's more blessed to give than to receive. From the very beginning, that was his approach. That was his business model, you could say. Jesus said, freely you have received, freely give. And so what a unique work it was for all of those years, for those many decades. Mr. Armstrong out there proclaiming God's warning witness message to all the world and never charging for it, offering all those materials, the booklets, the Plain Truth magazine, sending out all those letters that we sometimes quote from on this program, free of charge, no cost, no obligation. And so many people, tens of thousands of people, millions of people, responded to that. And of course, some of them came along and then were very faithful in their financial support for God's work. But it didn't start with Mr. Armstrong on the radio or on TV begging listeners for money. There's quite a few religious programs, of course, like that in the world today. As I say, this tradition, it really goes back to the late summer of 1933. Mr. Armstrong writes about this history. It's in chapters 30 and 31 of his autobiography. And that book is one that we just printed, by the way. Our biggest book yet, a really beautiful copy of Herbert Armstrong's autobiography. And we make that available to you for free as well. It was offered just at this past Feast of Tabernacles observance, as many of our members grabbed hold of their complimentary copy and are now going through this book. Of course, over the past week and a half, it has been very busy for some of us traveling. In my case, I spent some time in Florida and then finished up with the Feast of Tabernacles and the Last Great Day here in Edmond, Oklahoma, our headquarters campus. Of course, this is where we have the main studio for KPCG. This is where the broadcast goes out over the air here in North Edmond. The program that I have, anyway, it starts at 7 a.m. here in Oklahoma, and it's very dark outside right now as we're about to head into the month of November, and the time change is coming up here in a week or two. I think it's next weekend in the UK and the week after that here in the United States. So it's an early start on this side of the pond, and over in Edstone. We'll be back in the Edstone booth on Friday. That starts at 1 p.m. in the afternoon. So some of you I know have been also busy with travel and with the festival observance. So you've got to get back into the groove, get back into the routine, and make sure as you do, as I've said so many times before, that you email the program, td@kpcg.fm. The inbox is a little sparse at this time of the year with so many of our listeners off and about. It has been, though, a nice rejuvenating period. Not a lot of time to really scour the news. We'll have to get back into some of that, but it's been a nice little break away from that, and also a break away from some of the reading and the studying. And I look forward to getting back into that as I was plowing through the autobiography before the Feast of Observance came upon me. And then, of course, I had to turn my attention to some other studies and to some other readings. But it's a wonderful book, Herbert Armstrong's autobiography. And some of this history here that I'll recount is, as I say, covered in chapters 30 and 31 of that big book. There were two ministers in the Oregon Conference by the names of Oberg and Ray, and they were really going after Mr. Armstrong, a young Mr. Armstrong at that time, in his early 40s, I guess he would have been. And he was receiving a $3 per week salary, just a pittance, really, from this Oregon Conference. And these two antagonists were really upset because they believed that Mr. Armstrong was not counseling people for baptism the right way. And so they were doing everything that they could to try to frustrate Mr. Armstrong's progress and to have him put out of the conference. And all of this came to a head at a conference meeting in Harrisburg, Oregon. This was sometime, as I say, late in the summer of 1933. And during this conference or this meeting, these two antagonists just went off onto this four-hour tirade against Mr. Armstrong, saying that he wasn't following the Bible, he wasn't counseling people for baptism properly. And Mr. Armstrong was there listening quietly to these two practically screaming. And then he got up after that and gave a 15-minute statement that he had prepared in advance, talking about how he worked with prospective members and how he based it upon the plain teachings of the Bible. And as it happens, right at the end of his spiel, Mr. Fisher came up to pick him up and to drive him over to the Fear Butte schoolhouse, because he had a public speaking campaign going on there Sunday night. And so before he left the conference meeting, Mr. Armstrong asked the board members and the ministers if they would refrain from taking any kind of official action so that he might have opportunity to speak again at another meeting. But as soon as he left, the board members promptly passed a resolution saying that Mr. Armstrong had to follow their procedures regarding baptism, regarding counseling others for baptism, which really wasn't according to the Bible. Mr. Armstrong then, when he heard about this, he immediately wrote a letter to the conference rejecting that $3 per week salary. He said in the autobiography that he wasn't resigning from the conference, but that he was no longer going to accept that $3 per week salary. And his wife was right in step with him on this decision. And Mr. Armstrong wrote to his wife. This is, again, recounted in the autobiography. He said to his wife, "If men pay us salary, even as small as $3 per week, we have now learned we must preach only what men order us to preach. If we're to work for God, we must look to God as our employer and trust Him to supply our every material need. And then," he added, "if we fail to serve Him as He commands, He will stop our income. And so this was a lesson that Herbert Armstrong learned early on in his life. He learned back in 1933 that he was working for God and no one else. And that if he was working for men, he'd be controlled and directed by men. Men like these two antagonists. And so he rejected that income, as small as it was, and proceeded then from there to rely solely on God. Let me take you to an audio clip. This is from Mr. Armstrong's old radio program, where he's also explaining some of this history about rejecting that salary, some of this history that I just went through. This is clip one.
At that time, I had a little weekly salary, and I mean a little, and I'm not going to tell you how little. You'd laugh or you wouldn't believe it. But there were other men that didn't like the way I was doing things as I was instructed in the Bible. They didn't like the way I baptized people. They didn't like some of the things. They wanted me to follow their ways, their human traditions, and the way of their church, which was contrary to the way of God and the way of Christ and the way I read in the Bible. So they called a meeting. They called me on the carpet, and I was going to do the way men said and give up the way of the Bible and do what they said or else. I told them, take their salary. I ran across a letter that I had written my wife immediately after that, because at the time I was down in Eugene, Oregon, starting this ministry, and my wife and family were still living up in Salem, Oregon, and I'd had to leave my family for a while. I got back about every couple of weeks to see them. And I wrote my wife a long letter about it. And that was just in the intimacy and the privacy of just between my wife and myself. And I read that letter just recently. It had gotten filed away somewhere and come to light rather yellow with age now. And I said in it that we would give up that salary and we would work for God. And I was beginning to see that if we were going to work for God, we'd have to rely on God for the way and for the money and everything. And I said, from here on, we're not ever going to ask for money. We're not going to rely on people for money. And by the way, you don't hear me ask for money on this broadcast, do you? How many religious programs do you hear where they're not ding-donging you for money and begging you for money and telling you that if they don't get money, they can't continue? Listen, my friends, many has been the time when if we didn't get some money, we couldn't have continued. But I didn't ask you for it. I went to God in prayer and asked Him, and He has always provided it. He's the one I'm serving, He's the one I'm working for, and He's the one I go to. Now, God has provided. So I told my wife at that time that we would trust God from here on. We're going to work for Him. We're not going to seek to please men. It's been a rocky and a hard road. Don't think it's been easy, my friends. We were tried and we were tested, as I doubt if any of you have ever been. I don't think you've gone through what we have. You may just think you have. You give yourself over to God, and God will let you be tried and tested for your own strengthening and for your own upbuilding. I speak from a very rich life of experience, if you only knew. But we trusted God.
That's Herbert Armstrong talking on one of his old radio programs, summarizing that history that I gave to you earlier. What a work. That's some pretty amazing history. Relying solely on God, and as he explained there at the end, it hasn't been easy. It was a rocky and hard road, but God always provided. God always provided. It goes all the way back. This policy, this principle, this reliance on God, it goes all the way back to this crucial test from 1933. Where Mr. Armstrong came to understand that he had to obey and to serve God alone, and that if he did that, God would bless him. In the autobiography, he writes, God had prepared us for relying solely on Him by many miraculous answers to prayer. Therefore, we knew in perfect faith that God would supply our need. This, as I say, was the crucial test. God was testing him in 1933. And it proved to be a turning point for the work. It really did. He says so in the autobiography. He writes, this was the crossroads, the final pivotal crucial test before the living Christ began opening the doors of mass communication through which God's work at last could come to life after centuries of sleeping and go forth in mighty power to all the world, preparing the way before Christ returned to earth as ruler over all nations. This was it. This was the final crucial pivotal turning point for God's work. It happened back there in the summer of 1933. What a tradition. It's carried right through to today, where you have all of this literature, as I said at the top of the show, going out free of charge. Well, it's paid for. There are faithful supporters, co-workers, members who pay for these efforts faithfully. People making real sacrifices. But what a unique program. Going all the way back to Herbert Armstrong's World Tomorrow program, where he didn't go in front of the mic and just start begging away, or as he said there in that clip, ding-donging for money. He didn't do that. He went to God when there was a need in the work. He cried out to God when there was a need for Ambassador College or for the television program or the radio program or the personal correspondence department. Or you can go right down the list. There were trials and tests along the way, as he said. It wasn't just smooth sailing. It was a difficult, bumpy, rocky road for sure. But God always provided. God always provided. This was the pivotal turning point for God's work. And it all goes back to Mr. Armstrong rejecting, canceling that $3 per week salary. He says, I did not fully realize then that this was a crucial turning point in the history of the Church of God. What actually was happening, though we did not understand it then, was that a new era was dawning in the history of the Church of God. That's what was happening. God was establishing a new church era. You can read about it in Revelation 3, verses 7 and 8, where it says, the angel of the church in Philadelphia write, these things says he that is holy, he that is true, he that has the key of David, he that opens and no man shuts, and shuts and no man opens. I know your works. Behold, I've set before you an open door, and no man can shut it, for you have a little strength, and have kept my word, and have not denied my name. See, God just opened one door after another for Mr. Armstrong to take the gospel message around the world. It was during that era, that sixth era, that the true gospel went all over the world. Matthew 24:14. It went out to the world as a witness. It really did. He reached multiple millions. 8 million subscribers to the Plain Truth during the mid-1980s. More than 400 television stations. At a time when, well, in the mid-80s, there were only 3 or 4 big networks. There were so many people that were familiar with Mr. Armstrong's ministry. And not nearly as much noise and distraction as there is today. Mr. Armstrong wrote, from the all-day wrangle, I was independent of them and their ministers financially. From that time, I was dependent solely on God. We did not ask or solicit financial contributions from any except those who voluntarily became financial co-workers with us. And that has been the policy since. That's been the policy since. And we've followed in those steps from 1933 unto this day. What a wonderful blessing that policy is, to be totally dependent on God to get this warning message out, to preach the true gospel message in love as a warning witness to this world. And what a blessing it is. Speaking of those who've voluntarily come along to support this work, what a blessing it is for us to be able to support it, to learn in the process, to learn to live the way of give. He says in the autobiography, conversion had deflated ego and replaced self-assurance with the confidence that is faith in God. That's talking about his conversion in 1927. He also writes a lot about this in the autobiography, what led up to it and such. But then he says here, and this crisis, speaking of what happened in 1933, this crisis was the turning point when my wife and I actually, in practice, began relying solely on God, no longer on either self or men. So you have the conversion turning point from 1927, and then you have this 1933 turning point when Herbert Armstrong and his wife actually, in practice, began relying solely on God, no longer on either self or men. He said, until these two milestones had been hurdled, God could not open the big doors. The difference between this work of God and others is just that. This is the work of God and not of men. It started and continued to rely on God, not on men. That's the difference. That's the vast difference between this work, God's work, and the work of men and all these other works and all these other groups. This is what makes God's work, God's true church, so unique. It just doesn't operate like other churches or organizations operate. And of course it shouldn't, because if it's God's work, then it has to be done God's way. And so in the case of that era, the Philadelphia era, boy, it started in the smallest possible way, the mustard seed beginning. I mean, $3 a week was practically nothing, even in that day. Mr. Armstrong rejected it. There were a few people that were listening to his preaching, and that's about it. That's how it started. This was the crucial test. As long as Herbert Armstrong was employed by men back in 1933, he wasn't free to rely on God alone. He wasn't free to be completely faithful to God's word. As he said in his book, the living Christ simply could not start opening the doors for his work. Not until Mr. Armstrong was free to rely solely on God. There's a profound lesson in this, of course, for us, because this is where we want to be, free to rely solely on God. And when we're in that position, that's when God can really begin to open doors for us in our lives, in our marriages, our families, in our work, in our responsibilities, in our support for God's work. The key is to rely on God alone. When we come back, we'll go through a little more of this history and also look at a couple of scriptures that early on really influenced the approach that Mr. Armstrong took when proclaiming the true gospel message to this world. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Don't forget to make up for lost time. Email the program, td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course is a distance learning program that makes the Bible clear and understandable. The Correspondence Course enables enrollees to learn what the Bible itself says about subjects that affect you and the world you live in. This fascinating Bible course highlights and proves what the Bible says about morality, war, religion, terrorism, and other current events, focusing on the root causes of this world's many problems facing man, as well as their solutions. The Bible and this course also focuses on the reason mankind was created in the first place, the way to happiness, accomplishment, and fulfillment, as well as the truth behind important doctrinal questions, such as what happens after we die, the nature of God, the resurrection, the millennium, and other critical subjects. Enroll today in the Herbert W. Armstrong Bible Correspondence Course. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
You know, my friends, when this present work started, I had been in the ministry prior to that time, had been ordained some time before, but this present work that has grown into this work, at the time it started, it was in a country schoolhouse out west of Eugene, Oregon. You've heard me say it a good many times and mention it. But in those days, I was walking out on that country road. I met a man out there near this country schoolhouse, a farmer that lived out in that neighborhood, came up to me one time and he said, "Mr. Armstrong," he said, "you're not going to get far." I said, "Is that so? Why do you think so?" "Well," he said, "you're preaching the Bible and people won't listen to it." He said, "Don't you know that the Bible corrects and reproves people and they don't want to take it?" "Why," he said, "the Bible is like a sharp two-edged sword, and a sword that cuts on both sides. And people don't like to be cut. People don't like to be hit. And if you're going to preach the Bible, you're going to preach what people don't want to hear. People won't support it. No one is ever going to give you any money. And it takes money if you're going to live, if you're going to preach. Nobody will ever support it." He said, "No, you're not going to get far."
That's Herbert Armstrong again from his old radio program talking about some of the history that's recorded there in the autobiography. If you don't have a copy of that book, contact this church or go to the website, thetrumpet.com, and make sure you order your free copy today. Such inspiring history. It's really the history of God's true church in the 20th century. There was a man that approached Mr. Armstrong early on in his ministry and said, "You're not going to get far. People aren't going to like the message. People aren't going to send you financial support." And well, as we covered in the first segment, Mr. Armstrong did use a different blueprint, that's for sure. He didn't go out begging for money. He didn't change the message to make it more, more palatable for people, to make them receive it or like it better. He just preached the truth. He preached the truth. "You're not going to get far." Where is that Where is that man today? Whatever happened to him? And look at what God was able to do through Mr. Armstrong. You know, really, if you think about that man that accosted him, as he said, in a lot of ways, what he was saying was true. So many people don't like this message. So many people don't want to be corrected and reproved. But that's why we can't look to people. We have to look to God. We're in this because we're serving God. Mr. Armstrong wrote, "But I was not relying on the support of people. If people paid me, I would have to serve people. If I were to serve God, I would have to look solely to God for support. Of course, God does work through human instruments, but I had to rely on God to lay it on the hearts of people to support the kind of preaching that obeys Isaiah 58 and verse 1. And what does it say in Isaiah 58, 1? God says, "Cry aloud and spare not. Lift up your voice like a trumpet and show my people their transgressions and the house of Jacob their sins." Mr. Armstrong knew that he was called to warn the world. He knew that the true church was called on to warn the world. And so many of God's people in this end time have forgotten this. They knew it at one time, but they've forgotten this. They've lost sight of the commission God gives to his church. They've forgotten why the church exists. They've forgotten the church's commission. They've forgotten that this is a trumpet-blowing work. So many in the world, of course, as I said, they do reject this message. But it is, nevertheless, God's message. It's a message that you're not going to get from any other church or from any other organization. It's a very simple message in many respects, but it's just not easy to deliver. God says in 1 John 3:4 that sin is the transgression of the law. And so when he says in Isaiah 58, verse 1, that true ministers have to lift up their voices to show the people their sins, that's a call to repentance, to reconciliation to God through Christ. That's a warning that we've gone astray and that we've got to get it back right with God. God's law. That's a message about blessings and cursings, to use the terminology Moses used. If you obey God, you'll be blessed. But there will be curses for disobedience. God said through Isaiah the prophet, "Cry aloud and spare not. Lift up your voice like a trumpet." Now, look at the Bible for what it is. Look at these prophets of old. Major, minor prophets, you name them. Look at the message that Jesus Christ proclaimed. It got him killed. Same with Paul. Same with so many of the others. Peter. That's been the way the world has reacted to the truth. Like I say, in so many ways, the man who accosted Mr. Armstrong in 1933... he was right. But so was Mr. Armstrong. Mr. Armstrong was right to work for God, to proclaim the truth for God, and then to trust God to support it, to bring in the people who would support it faithfully. And who can deny the fruits? Who can deny it? My father in the Isaiah End Time Prophet booklet, he writes that the primary work of God's church is to proclaim Israel's sins. And of course, we know the modern-day descendants of Israel. Primarily, it's the United States and Britain. And he says here, the primary work that God's given us to do is to proclaim Israel's sins. He says that when God says to show my people their transgression, he's speaking, first of all, to his church. So there was a warning message that went out from the early days of this church, the Philadelphia Church of God. We've been going strong now for 27 years, and early on in that history, that warning was aimed primarily at spiritual Israel, primarily at God's people who had turned away from the truth, who had lost sight of this commission, who had forgotten why the church exists, and who have since, for many of them, have forgotten the meaning behind these annual festivals, the Feast of Tabernacles, the Last Great Day, or before that, the Day of Atonement, the Feast of Trumpets, picturing the return of Jesus Christ to this earth. In the case of atonement, Satan being put away and the world becoming at one with God and the new civilization that God will build when Jesus Christ returns to this earth. And then finally, that great white throne judgment, when everyone who's ever lived will have an opportunity for salvation after a resurrection to mortal flesh and blood. You can read about it in Ezekiel 37, Revelation 20. I know you don't hear this in other churches, but it's in the Bible. That's what Mr. Armstrong stuck to from the beginning. Preaching the truth of the Bible and then leaving it to God to bless it, to empower it, to strengthen it. God did do that. He certainly did. But look at the pattern that this world is on and the widespread acceptance of sin and the ways of sin and all the sickness and the disease and the unhappiness, the boredom, the fears, the worries, the inequality, the injustice, the poverty, the crime, the violence, the death, the destruction. And amid all of that, do you see the people of Israel, the descendants of Israel, do you see them stepping up to set an example for this world, to let the light shine, to show the world that, look, there's blessings to be had for obedience? You don't see that in too many cases. You see Israel leading the way with transgressions and sins. There was a story a few weeks ago about Vladimir Putin's Russia and this group in Moscow, this group of young men that worked to get this exhibit shut down. This is from The Spectator. It says, last weekend, a group of young activists turned out on a Moscow street to protest against Western decadence. They were a hard-faced bunch, standing defiantly in military poses and wearing uniforms bearing the logo Officers of Russia, Executive Youth Wing, as they blocked access to an exhibition by an American photographer that featured images of nude adolescents, nude teenagers. That was the exhibit. That was the art, quote unquote, the art exhibit. That's America doing its part to export filth to faraway places like Moscow. And a group of young Russians that took it upon themselves to try to get this so-called exhibit shut down. And good for them. But what a shame. What a shame. This is the example that Israel sets for the world today. The show of their countenance does witness against them. and they declare their sin as Sodom. They hide it not. Woe unto their soul, it says, for they have rewarded evil unto themselves. In our nations today, we declare that sin. We've read that verse often, Isaiah 3 and verse 9. We declare the sin, just like in Sodom. And do we remember what happened in Sodom and Gomorrah? It doesn't seem like many people do. Or if they do, they don't care. Because today we take pride in the fact that we live in an anti-family culture. We take pride in the fact that there's been a total breakdown of the family. We take pride in the fact that we're living in an upside-down society. We declare that. We promote that. And when Israel should be setting the example, it takes a young group of Russian men to finally draw the line in the sand and say, that's enough. We don't want this. When God called Israel out of Egyptian bondage, you can read this or study it for yourself in the book of Deuteronomy. He intended for Israel to be a model nation, to be a kind of national showcase that the surrounding Gentile nations could observe, could learn from, that they could see a nation obeying God's laws and all of the benefits that come from obedience, all of the benefits on a national scale. Moses outlined this awesome responsibility to Israel just before they entered into the promised land. You can read more in Deuteronomy 4 and other chapters. And yet you know the history. Israel consistently failing to measure up to this high calling. And instead of remaining faithful to God's laws, she repeatedly borrowed the pagan ideas and customs from surrounding Gentile nations. Israel didn't know that God's law was her most valuable asset. That's the thing Mr. Armstrong learned in 1933. And this man came up and accosted him and said, "You're not going to get far, Herbert Armstrong. You're not going to go very far. You preach the Bible. And the Bible corrects and reproves." And Mr. Armstrong's response was, "Yes, that's true. But he had the law of God on his side. He had the government of God on his side. He had God on his side. And look at how God blessed him." God backed that work. And it went on for some 5 decades. And as soon as he died, what happened to so many people in the Worldwide Church of God? They turned to lawlessness. They turned to transgression. They went after and attacked this little church to try to prevent us from printing the autobiography of Herbert Armstrong or Mystery of the Ages, all these works, all this revelation that God gave to Herbert Armstrong. And all of a sudden, the very organization that he raised up with God's help and power, it was fighting to suppress the truth, to do away with this truth, because they had developed the same mindset as that man who accosted Mr. Armstrong in 1933. They thought, well, the world's not going to receive this message. It's too strong. We can't cry aloud and spare not. We can't declare the sins of the people. No one will accept that. We're living in a different time. I mean, they actually said these things. And so they went to sleep. And so they stopped preaching. They stopped warning. And where are they today? Where are those people? Where are the ministers? Where's the plain truth? Where's the program? Where are the booklets? Where are the youth programs? Where's the SEP camp? Or where is Ambassador College? Where are the brethren? Where's the work? It's all gone silent. It's in darkness. It's no longer out there. See, when we do that, we're not going to get very far. When we stop obeying God, we won't get far. When we stop relying on God solely, we won't get far. That's the truth. That's the truth of your Bible. God says, cry aloud and spare not. Show my people their sins. Tell them what they're doing. Show them in love. Show them that you love them, that you care about them. Show them that there's hope. Show them that they can turn it around. Mr. Armstrong wrote, this is from 1967, a coworker letter. He said, God began intervening in world affairs in 1934 in the very smallest way at first, with this World Tomorrow broadcast and the Plain Truth magazine. He said, this intervention is preparing the way for Christ's coming. It's preparing the way for Christ's coming. It is restoring the knowledge that sin is the transgression of God's law. That's 1 John 3 and verse 4. This is what the world has forgotten. This is what the world of Christianity has forgotten. They don't preach this because they think like that man that accosted Mr. Armstrong in 1933. Well, we wouldn't get far with a message like that. Let's preach what they want to hear. And you can read about that in Isaiah 30. That's prophesied. It's prophesied. 2 Timothy 4. Paul was telling Timothy there, look, you stick with the truth and you be relentless. Preach the word. Because there's a time coming when they're going to want smooth things. They're just going to want to hear smooth teachings, things that make them feel good. Let me just read to you what Paul said to Timothy as he was urging him to stick to the truth. This is 2 Timothy 4. Preach the word, be instant, in season, out of season, reprove, rebuke, exhort with all longsuffering and doctrine. See, that's exactly what that man who accosted Mr. Armstrong said that you can't do. You'll never succeed with that. A message that reproves and rebukes and exhorts. But Paul said to Timothy, stick with that. Stick with God's truth. He said here, for the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but after their own lusts shall they heap to themselves teachers having itching ears, and they'll turn away their ears from the truth and shall be turned to fables. That time is here. That time is upon us. How unique the true gospel message is as it goes out, based on the truth of the Bible. It's all in there. Back to this coworker letter, it says, it is restoring the knowledge that sin is the transgression of God's law. It is by a preaching of love, showing the people their sins. It is making plain what sin is. It is lifting up its voice like a trumpet and is crying aloud with the amplified power of more than 45 million watts of radio power. This is back in 1967, talking about that radio program going out worldwide and how that it was fulfilling Isaiah 58 and verse 1. Mr. Armstrong said here, very soon now, God is going to intervene in world affairs just prior to Christ's coming, by sending on the sinners of the world, the plagues of the day of the Lord. That is a time of God's wrath against evil, spoken of in more than 30 different prophecies, both the Old and the New Testaments. And then Christ's coming is to occur as the climax of this day of the Lord. I mean, it's all in there, dozens of prophecies, and people don't preach them. Too strong. Too much about correction and violence. And so they preach smooth things. to those that have itching ears. God's church, God's work, and it's been this way from 1933 on. It preaches the truth, sound doctrine, preach the word, be instant, in season, out of season, reprove, rebuke, and exhort. That's what you can expect from this program and from the trumpet.com and from the Key of David television program and from all of the literature that we provide. And it's all given away free of charge. Freely you have received. Freely give. Just get out there with the truth of God. Get out there with the message of God. Get out there with the word of God. And then let God, not man, let God back it up. Let God empower it. Let God bless it. And God has certainly been doing that. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show as we resume the live broadcasts once again, in this case, right here from our beautiful headquarters campus in North Edmond, Oklahoma, on the campus of Herbert W. Armstrong College on kpcg.fm. That's where you can get the live stream. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you again tomorrow.